some cruel April Fool's joke. I'm really subbing in for class here today. So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 38th chapter, verses 40, 41, 42, and 43, finishing up the chapter entitled Akura's Arrival in Vrindavan. Chant the Sanskrit on the first verse, and I'll read the collection of them together. Tasmai Bhuktavate Pritya Rama Parama Dharmavit Makavashar Gandhamalyai Param Pritim Vyadat Puna Tasmai Bhuktavate Pritya Rama Parama Dharmavit Mukavashar Gandhamalyai Param Prityam Vyadat Puna. Please chant. So we'll read the collection of translations responsively. When Akura had eaten to his satisfaction, Lord Balaram, the supreme knower of religious duties, offered him aromatic herbs for sweetening his mouth, along with fragrances and flower gardens and flower garlands. Thus Akura once again enjoyed the highest pleasure. Text 41. Nanda Maharaj asked Akura, O descendant of Dashara, how are all of you maintaining yourselves while that merciless Kamsa remains alive? You are just like sheep under the care of a butcher. Text 42. That cruel self-serving Kamsa murdered the infants of his own sister in her presence. Even as she cried in anguish. So why should we even ask about the well-being of you, his subjects? And the final verse for this chapter, text 43. Honored by Nanda Maharaj, with these true and pleasing words of inquiry, Akura forgot the fatigue of his journey. Om Jnana Tumarandasya Jnanjana Shalakaya Chaksurum Dhamyana Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Mukam Kuroti Vachalam Pangumam Jayati Girim Yakripa Tamaham Bande Sri Guruam Dhinatarina Avancha Kalpatirubhis Chakripa Sindhivahiva Chakpatitanam Pavanayu Vaishnavayu Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaitikadarva Shivasi Gaur Bhakta Vinda Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So we're wrapping up this chapter entitled Akura's Arrival in Vrindavan. And we spent most of the last few weeks discussing in these different classes we've had, discussing this very exemplary chapter. This is one of those chapters that, you know, sometimes we read the Srimad Bhagavatam and think, oh yes, that's very nice. I don't see how I'm going to apply it to my daily life, but that's very nice to know. This is one of those chapters where we actually have a lot that we can take from it and apply to ourselves, particularly in regards to the mood, the consciousness, and the state of mind that one should have when they're preparing themselves to go to Vrindavan. Prabhupada was fond of saying you can't just buy a ticket to Vrindavan. So it's not that we do just that, get a ticket, get our visa properly now, because of course visa is required, and you know, just show up there at the gateway, the Bhaktivedanta gate in Vrindavan, okay, now I'm here. That can be done, but that doesn't guarantee that one actually arrives at Vrindavan. Preparing our consciousness, preparing our mood, preparing the state of mind in which we make that journey, what our goal will be, what our activities will be while we're there. This is all done prior to actually going. Just as the ticket is purchased prior to going, the visa is applied for prior to going, the bags are packed, etc. You know, when you go to India, usually you've got a shopping list. Okay, I have to pick up this, I have to pick up that, I have to get this, I have to get that. On that so-called shopping list should be preparing our consciousness. And this chapter is very instructive in that method. This past Sunday, I had the pleasure of observing my son's engagement ceremony here at the temple. And after it was finished, as I was sitting amongst friends, I was approached in a way humorously reminiscent of the wedding ceremony at the Godfather, where the Godfather's approach and ask for a request and gives his blessings like that. So one devotee approached me and said, at this time I wanted to ask you for a blessing. I said, certainly, please bless me, I can go to Vrindavan. So this is actually quite suitable. Of course, there was some humorous exchange back and forth, at which I will admit to a rather decent impersonation of Marlon Brando. But this is actually the real mood that we want to develop. If we're preparing to go to the Holy Dham, be it Vrindavan or Mayapur or whichever, we want to approach the devotees and ask for their blessings and get the proper state of mind, a proper consciousness, you know, and this is where it begins amongst our associates, amongst the Vaishnavas, the residents we reside with, and getting their blessings to undertake such a journey. So this is actually the type of humility and the mood of humility that is required to be able to serve in Vrindavan. And this is a very important point in and of itself. When we desire to go to Vrindavan, our efforts should not manifest themselves as a tourist, okay, or as a shopping expedition. You know, sometimes our service, when I lived in New York for many years, I ran the gift shop there, and regularly I would go to Vrindavan, and my service in going was to do all the different shopping for the devotees' needs. And so even with that being the service, one does not want to become preoccupied that this is what I'm in Vrindavan about. Now, that may be something that has to be dealt with, but our state of mind of what service will we render is what facilitates the reciprocation that the Dhamma awards to us. We should not doubt for a moment that the Dhamma is a personality. And just as any spiritual personality, the reciprocal process begins with service. So if we go to the Dhamma under the mood of being a tourist and seeing this and seeing that, or under the vision of a materialist and simply seeing the environmental discrepancies that one can find there, or in the mood of a developer, if you go there now, every few hundred feet, there's another development going up. And I'm not talking about just two or three stories. There's 12, 13, 20-story apartments and hotels and everything going up like this. So we don't want to go to the Dhamma in that mood. We want to go to the mood, to go to the Dhamma in the mood of being a servant, of what service can I render here? And there are many different opportunities, just residing within the Krishna Balaram Mandir complex or even the local ashrams there, one can go daily and do some service. One can make some service for themselves. As one is walking from point A to point B, picking up the trash or, you know, serving the Vaishnavas, you see sometimes when you go on the different parikrams, there'll be these devotees. Many times they're elderly Bengali widows that are sitting on the side of the road with a pot of water, just giving fresh water to the pilgrims to drink as they go by. These types of activities. There's one devotee who, not to embarrass him, I'll let remain unnamed, that whether he's residing in Vrindavan or Varshana, which he frequents quite regularly, or residing here, you'll see that his regular service involves a broom, and he sweeps a walkway. In Varshana, there is a set of stairs. All of you that have been to the temple know, very, very steep set of stairs that goes up. And while residing there, daily this devotee sweeps those stairs. And while residing here, daily this devotee comes after everyone is gone and sweeps the path from the driveway into here and around the veranda like that. So this is a genuine mood of service. And this type of mood, this type of service attitude will reciprocate the blessings that the Dham can bring on us. Because Srila Prabhupada encouraged that regularly his disciples, his followers, should go to these holy places for the process of purification, for the process of cleansing ourselves from the influence of residing here in the Western world and preaching. Of course, we can easily find the same degrading influences even in many of the holy places now that we find in the Western world, but the point is that they are still imbibed with the potency of having been Krishna's pastime places. So if we're to go to these places, that means that if we're to go to these places to become purified, that means that there has to be a process of achieving that purification. So part of that process, of course, is to go to the different places, hear the pastimes, the Krishna Katha spoken there, to listen to the sadhus, to engage in kirtan at these places. But another part of that process is to take up some service, either to the residents there or to the Dham itself, to do something significant so that, just like any of us, if someone comes and renders some service to us, we become very appreciative and want to reciprocate. Similarly, in our Krishna conscious vision of seeing all spiritual energy as having personality, if we want reciprocation from the Dham in the manifested way of cleansing our consciousness, of purifying our life, of giving us a more spiritual vision, it requires some reciprocal service. So this should be the way that we go. And as I mentioned, that begins with the type of attitude that one goes to the Dham with, how one begins to chart that process out. There's another very instructive point in these verses here today, and that is how one should receive a guest. But before these verses here receiving, I did want to touch on a point in yesterday's verse in the purport that's given. Well, the verse itself, as you will all remember, mentions how after Krura had arrived and he'd been properly honored by Lord Balaram and his feet massaged and all, then they gave him various foods, different types of edibles. And the purport, Vishnu Chakraparti Thakur, had mentioned that even though it was late in the evening, that generally one shouldn't break fast at night. It's, at the end of the day, one finishes their meal, and then generally one doesn't take meal again until breakfast the next day. That's what's called breakfast. You're breaking the fast. So nonetheless, Akura was very eager to receive prasadam from the home of Nanda Maharaj and Krishna Balaram. So regardless of those circumstances, he took prasadam. So I was thinking from my experience of traveling with Nidumna Maharaj that many times the main meal of the day would be at 11 o'clock at night. You know, just the circumstances would be what they are, from arriving here or there, having late programs. And so as it mentions in that verse, Akura dispensed with this formality. So sometimes these scenarios, the reciprocal exchange of giving prasadam and accepting prasadam, giving gifts, accepting gifts like that, overrides the guidelines that one might necessarily follow. Now, in verse 40, the first verse for today, there's a particular Sanskrit word which is very essential to the mood of these next four verses, and it's pritya. Pritya means affectionately. Affectionately is mentioned in the very beginning of the Sanskrit words, because it determines, that affectionateness determines the mood at which one should have for serving a guest when they come to one's home. The mood that one has when rendering service is very important, because it will influence the way the service is received. You know, sometimes if you go to a, because I'm in retail, I notice these things a lot. If you go to a particular store and the person behind the counter there is inattentive or insensitive to your presence, or rude, or speaking on the phone while they're trying to conduct their business, you feel very much, you know, not very well taken care of. And it's actually not a very nice mood to receive someone. So there's a word here, a Sanskrit phrase, Atiti Devo Bhava, and this comes from the Tadatariya Upanishad. And in this particular Upanishad, it's very descriptively given how one should receive a guest. Particularly, it mentions guests that are arriving unexpectedly. Titi, many of you are familiar with this word, our lunar calendar is broken into different titis, calendar days, calendar time slots. So our activities are generally based on that calendular, if you will, calendrical life pattern. But when someone arrives outside of that, right, just kind of spontaneously comes, this type of a guest, without a fixed plan, okay, at such and such time I'll receive, you know. No, someone just knocks on your front door and there they are. My wife and I had this relationship with one friend of ours, Bhumna Prabhu, many years ago when we were in New York. He'd just show up on the door sometimes. We'd think he was in another country, knock on the door, come on in, receive him nicely. So this type of reception, this is specifically highlighted and glorified if one goes out of their way to receive someone in that condition. And there are five specific things that this Upanishad mentions should be done in receiving that unexpected, unplanned guest. The first one is to offer some scented fragrance, dhup, some incense, to worship them like that. The second one is deep, to offer some lamp, some illumination for that personality. The third one is what we know as naivedyam, to give some sweet food, some nice foodstuffs for them to eat. The fourth one is known as ashtaka. Ashtaka means it's a way of honoring a person. You actually what it really refers to is putting tilak on the forehead of another person, respecting them like that. And the last one is pushpa, a flower offering, giving a garland. This is one way that we show our respect when some guest comes. I actually saw an amazing display of this one time. I was at a kirtan program in at the Mahaprabhu temple in Vrindavan, and this is a very, very old kirtan program. It's been going on for 150 years. They would bring this kirtan party from Bengal, and before the kirtan program began, the pujari went around to each one of the drums and would place a garland on the drum, put some sandalwood paste and flower petals into each of the kartals, and then to each of the kirtan players like that. So very, very formal way of receiving them. So this type of offering of a garland is showing an appreciation like that. So these are the different types of ways in the Upanishads. And of course the Upanishads, we know they're very, very, very old. So this type of process of receiving a guest is practiced by everyone that has any type of culture. So here in these verses, we see that Krishna and Balaram, remember, Krishna and Balaram are not adults here, they're children. They're still living in Vrindavan. They haven't left to go to Mathura yet, so they're still young. And so under the guiding direction of Nanda Maharaj, they're following this ancient tradition of how to properly receive a guest, in this case a kura. Now there's one point that's not mentioned in these verses but is indicated, and that is the instructive nature of a parent. You know, the activity that we find as parents is that we guide our children in what activities they should execute, how they should perform things. You know, the Prabhupada would always say that when, particularly there's the purport in the second canto, the first volume of the second canto, where Prabhupada speaks about how Yudhishthira Maharaj observed all of his family member engaged in different types of devotional activities, and so he also observed these activities. So we have the responsibility as parents in our homes to set this example for our children to follow. They see that we rise, that we perform devotional activities, arti, japa, offering of bhoga, that you know, that we, whatever food does come in the house is first offered in this way. And so in this way, not only are we doing this for our own benefit, but the benefit of teaching our children, both by instructing them what they should do and by giving that example. It's not simply enough just to say, oh, you should do this, this, and this, but then not doing it themselves. Of course, when I was growing up, it was always an example used by many of my associates that our parents would always tell us, you know, you shouldn't smoke cigarettes, you shouldn't smoke cigarettes, but of course our parents were smoking cigarettes. No, you shouldn't do this, this isn't good for you. So that type of instruction is not beneficial. But the type of instruction to our children where not only are we giving them the practical example, but giving them the guidance in how they can perform that, because that results in them actually imbibing it and taking it into themselves and then passing that on to their own children. So in this way, tradition, Vaishnava etiquette, continues on from, you know, one generation to the next. And we see from this type of training that Krishna and Balaram receive here, that later, when Krishna was residing in Dwarka, and he received Sudama Brahman, this same type of service was rendered there. Give him a nice seat, massage his feet, wash his feet, massage him like that. So in this first verse, after the mention of the mood, pritya, affectionately, then comes what is done in that mood of affection. So the first thing is mukavasa. Mukavasa means to offer some sweet herbs for the mouth after a meal. So we see in the previous verse that Akura had been offered some nice foods, and so after finishing that, Lord Balaram comes forward. Another name for this would be tambu, to give some spices for the mouth. This is after taking a meal, there are different tastes that are kind of floating around in the mouth. So to freshen the mouth, one would take some different types of spices. I have a very nice combination that I offer to my Giriraj each morning after his breakfast. Some silver-coated cardamom seeds and some little balls of silver, of sugar candy coated in silver, and some anise seeds and some dates that are soaked in rose water and then coated in sugar, little pieces like that. So this is a combination. There's one really wonderful Supatiwala in Jaipur that I get all this from, mix this combination. So each day I offer this to Giriraj. So in this way, after the meal, some nice refreshment for the mouth is given. And then after that, it mentions that he offered Gandha. And Gandha in this particular scenario refers to some fragrances, some type of nice perfume. Generally speaking, when Gandha refers to sandalwood paste, and when that sandalwood paste is ground, the fresh sandalwood itself would give a very nice fragrance, and sometimes different oils, particularly like a guru oil, would be added. Of course, I don't know if anyone here has any guru oil in their home. It's like, you know, $70,000 a bottle or something, you know, pure guru oil. But some nice oils are added to the combination and ground, and then offered on the person's forehead like that, some very fragrant like that. And then finishing that, as we mentioned, Malya, some nice garland is given. So in this way, step by step, we see procedure, what is offered in what order and why it is offered and what the benefit of that offering is. And if we look at this carefully over these verses, the last couple and these the next few we've got here, that this is basically a very nice instruction also for the process of deity worship. We are given some nice indication here of how to worship the deity. Now, some of you may or may not have deities in your home, or may or may not have had the opportunity to serve Radha Shamsundar and their associates on the altar here. But in that process, there's a very clear procedural direction. The first thing one offers, asana, one offers a nice seat. So inviting the Lord to sit somewhere. And then swagatam, after you invite the Lord, sit, then some words of praise. You know, you don't just, once you have an important personality, you don't just start right in with things, you glorify them. Everyone likes to hear a few nice words about themselves. So you offer some asana, invite the Lord to sit, and then some swagatam, some nice words of greeting. And then after that, padyam, washing of the feet. And then after padyam comes argyam. Argyam means it's a mix of yogurt and milk, with mostly water and a few auspicious spices, and then it's sprinkled on the forehead of an individual. This is a way that one receives a respectable person. And then after the argyam, one offers achman to rinse the mouth. And then after achman, one offers a sweet drink. It's called madhuparka. It's honey and milk, sugar, and a little bit of ghee mixed in there. And one tastes this. It's very, very tasty, and it's very refreshing. And then after this, what was referred to as Gandha are in deity procedures, Tailam, scented oils. One massages the feet, or in the case of the Lord, the entire body with some nice scented oils. And then Snan. Snan means the bath. Now, one thing to mention here, because we have this procedure here in the Vrindavan community of public Abhishekas, and one thing that many people don't realize when they come is they begin to bathe the deity first with this conch shell that they get at the feet. And this is actually not correct, because the padya, the worshipping of the feet, has already been performed. When we take snan, when we take bath, we bathe from the head down. I don't think I know anybody that when they turn the shower on, they stick their feet in the tub first and get them wet, and then they step in. It's you're in the shower, and the water comes down from the top. So this is snan, bathing. So when we come before the deity, and we're given that opportunity to publicly bathe the deity, snan means we pour from the head down. Another reason for that, of course, it's a safety precaution for the deity, because many people, when you perform these public abhishekas, are not familiar with care in taking care of the deity, and they'll bump the deity with the conch shell, with pujari. Sometimes we see that it's very painful to watch. So snan is performed from the top down. So the next time we have an abhishek, you can know that that's what you're supposed to do. After bathing, then what comes? You get a towel, angavastra. wash drying off of the limbs. Vastra, cloth, and unga, drying off of the limbs. And then Sringar, decorating very nicely, some beautiful clothing, some beautiful garlands, some amazing jewelry, earrings, finger rings, toe rings, bracelets, decorating of the face, beautiful turban with emblem Milkut pieces on it. It's interesting that here in Alachua, Shamsundar only wears turbans. He has amazing crowns. You never see him with crown unless you happen to come to Mangalarti. That's the only time he has a crown on. So wonderful, wonderful Sringar like this. And anybody that has had the opportunity to travel can attest to the fact that here in New Ramanreti, we have some of the finest deity Sringar that can be found anywhere. You would be very hard-pressed to find any service to the deities that matches this. And of course, all of these different things are offered, as we mentioned in the beginning, pritya, with the mood of affection. Not begrudgingly, oh, I have to go bathe the deity. Okay. No, but a loving mood. Just as when a mother takes care of her child, even if it's a very externally unpleasant activity of cleaning the child after it soils itself. Well, the mother's very, very happy to do that. Very carefully and affectionately cleans the child, very gently, with great devotion does this. So that type of mood should be there when we're rendering service to the deity. So having performed these different activities, we've seen that Krishna and Balaram, having been trained by Nanda Maharaj, have received this guest Akrura very nicely into their home. And in receiving Akrura in this way, they now move on to the next thing. And what is that next thing? They begin to inquire. Well, actually, before that, we see that after being offered these things, it has an impact. And that impact is that Akrura becomes very happy, very satisfied. So this is another reason, going back to this Tadatriya Upanishad, why one should receive a guest in this way. Because when we're received in this way in someone's home, oh, we feel very satisfied. Oh, and all of the stress, all of the anxiety, all of the difficulty that may have been there from a journey is now taken away. And I feel, oh, it's very nice to be here. They've taken such nice care of me. Oh, this is such wonderful. I feel so happy. So Akrura now feels very, very happy. And once Akrura is comfortable and settled, Nanda Maharaj, seeing that Satkritam, that he's been properly honored and worshipped, he begins to inquire. And what is that inquiry? Well, how is the family? How are the friends? How is everyone doing? We see this when Mahaprabhu's associates, under the direction of Yes, Sivananda Sen, thank you. Under the direction of Sivananda Sen and the guidance, would go from Bengal all the way to Puri for the Rath Yatra, that as they would arrive and greet each other, there would be conversation, oh, how is this one, and is that one's devotional life doing so well, and what about the service going on in this temple? And so this type of inquiry, just like when we see devotees we haven't seen in a long time. So in this way, Nanda Maharaj moves on, having honored and respected Akrura, or had his boys do it, I should say. Now he sits down with him to have some. So, but he realizes rather quickly that it is a futile question. There's really no point to asking how is everyone, because of three particular words. And I would pray very sincerely that none of you are ever described in these three particular words. Asutri, Kla, and Abhidit. A self-indulgent, cruel murderer. This is the description given of Kamsa. Nanda Maharaj says, how is it to be expected that you're doing well? He uses a very unpleasant example, that you're like sheep who are being kept by a butcher. Well, no good can come from that. One thing I noted about that example that's given, and that's not given in the purport, that's given in the verse, that means that even during these times, the process of animal slaughter was known to exist, which is unfortunate. the cruel and brutal act of slaughtering animals. So Nanda Maharaj mentions, he said, you know, what can I expect in inquiring from you how everybody's doing? You're living under that kamsa. It's like, you know, you're like sheep under the care of a butcher. And everyone knows that if a sheep is under the care of a butcher, the butcher may externally be taking nice care and feeding him well and seeing that they've got a nice place to stay and like that. But this is all for one purpose, to do away with him. So these three words are horrible words to be used to describe someone. And the horrible acts that earn him this description are given in great detail. In the 42nd verse here, the translation is just, you know, it paints a picture of a horrific personality. Now, keep in mind, this is Nanda Maharaj speaking. Who is a more gentle, soft-hearted, loving personality than Nanda Maharaj? He's the father of Krishna and Balaram. He owns thousands of cows. He's the protector of all the residents under his jurisdiction there in Vrindavan. Such a wonderful personality. But he understands also the reality of the world. So he describes that cruel, self-serving Kamsa murdered the infants of his own sister. Now, we sometimes read about these types of horrible, heinous acts in the newspapers today. You know, a mother killing her children, or, you know, a family member killing everyone and then shooting themselves. Or, and of course, that would be nice if Kamsa at least did that. You know, took his own life. But Kamsa's too arrogant to do that. Self-indulgent people generally don't follow that pattern. So, but at any rate, it's described how he killed her children. And we all know the story all too well, that he would go into the prison. First of all, he imprisoned her. You know, okay, stuck in a prison, you know. How many years were they there? So many years. And every year, she would give birth to a child, and he would go into the prison, take the child, and kill the child. What a horrible person. Not only such a cruel, covered, insensitive individual to kill the children, but in front of her, while she is crying in anguish. You have no compassion. Your heart is not the least little shred of softness in it, that you take the child, not only kill the child, but in front of the parent. Sometimes you read in the papers these really heavy drug cartels, you know, that if you cross them or something, they'll kill all the family members, you know, and sometimes do it in front of the person they're trying to get something from or whatever, you know. So these types of activities, it's horrible consciousness. But in front of the person, while they're crying and pleading, please don't do this. And this is his sister. So it just complicates itself. The more you look at it, the further this horrible scenario spreads itself. So therefore, Nanda Maharaj says, in this type of situation, why should we even ask about your well-being? How can you be doing well? You're living under this horrible person. This is the word used here, Vimrishamahe. Vimrishamahe. That we can conclude from this, that because Kamsa has done all these things to his sister, that therefore, if you're his subjects, how is he going to treat you any better? So this is the nature that Kamsa has manifested, and this is the known fact of everyone. I mean, Mathura is not actually under Kamsa's direct control. I mean, in one sense, but not so much directly. But even in Vrindavan, even in Vrindavan, they understand the nature of Kamsa and what he's done and how he's behaved. So, you know, they're concluding, well, if he's murdered his own sister's children, then what can anyone that serves underneath him expect? What type of protection? Because this is the duty of the king, to take care of their praja. The word used here, the Sanskrit phrase used here is Kim nu praju kalashalam, that what can be expected for the subjects then? So this is not the mentality that one should be extending to those that they're responsible for. But we see this many places in the world today where the leader will kill family members. There was a recent thing, North Korea, one uncle was killed, and in the Middle Eastern countries, it's not uncommon to kill different family members that have not performed their activities suitably or, you know, like that. So in scenarios like that, how can you expect that the citizens will be well looked after, which is the prime duty and responsibility of a king, of a ruler, to look after his citizens, that they should never feel any want, that they should never feel any anxiety, that they shouldn't have any distress, that all of these things will be taken care of by the proper guidance. A king like Yudhishthira, a king like Ambarish, that everything was so wonderful for the residents. So nonetheless, in spite of all this, Akura is received very nicely. And because he's speaking with friends and he's in a very comfortable circumstance, he forgets the fatigue of his travel. You know, even though the subject matter may be how cruel Kamsa is, but he's surrounded by friends and family. He's not surrounded by Kamsa and his, you know, court and like that. So this is, after all, the conclusive reception, the conclusive function of this type of a reception, to give that freedom from fatigue of travel to someone. Many of you, I'm sure, have had this when you travel somewhere and you get to the destination, whether it's a friend's house or another temple or a family residence, you know, just, oh, you feel so comfortable after you get settled, shower, and eat a little something like that. So this is the whole purpose of this instruction on how to receive a guest like this. And that's how we finish off this chapter here, that, you know, being honored in this way by the true and pleasing words of Nanda Maharaj, Akura forgets the fatigue of his journey. And then, of course, those famous words, thus in the purport of the humble servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, of the 10th canto, 38th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Akura's Arrival in Vrindavan. Now, tomorrow, we start the chapter, how shall we say, by which Akura earns his name. The word Akura actually means one who is not cruel, but according to the words we hear from the gopis in that chapter, that Akura is very cruel. Particularly, his cruelty begins to manifest itself very strongly starting in verse 13. So, as they say, stay tuned. Find out what it is that gets him this title, that the gopis refer to him in this way. So he begins to earn the credit for which he is many times maligned in our tradition, but for that particular kind of service that he gives to removing Krishna Balaram. So we'll finish there. If there's any questions or comments, no. Trivikram Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Very nice. Concerning the etiquette of receiving a guest, like washing his feet and wiping it and so forth, like at this time in this age, it seems a little like a little too much, but at least with the spiritual master, that can be applied here. But even that now has been criticized in different circles, and so that's even been stopped. See, but for common regular guests, at least there can be some basic things you can do. I mean, if you could shed a little light on it.
As the heart is moved, it's affection. One can't, you know, force these activities. It's according to how one feels. You know, there's no fault in washing someone's feet, especially another Vaishnava. You know, we may have our mental hang-ups about this, that, and the other, but that's our mental shortcomings. The culture, the service, the procedure is there, nonetheless. Particularly, it served a practical function, too, because, you know, you're traveling not many people traveled in socks with tie-up shoes. You know, this was mostly barefooted or maybe a pair of sandals. So there was a very practical point to washing the feet, relieving the fatigue, refreshing someone. But it brings about the humility in the servers, you know? So, I mean, as aspiring Vaishnavas, we should eagerly look for those activities which will assist in manifesting humility in our life. And so if one of those activities is to receive a guest in this manner, why should we not embrace it? There's certainly no shortcoming in doing so. We may or may not be able to manifest it in our heart, but there's certainly no shortcoming in doing such an activity. Anyone who would find fault, oh, you washed so-and-so's feet when they came to your house, well, that means that they have not understood humility. Yeah. Anyway. According to time and place. According to the heart. Yeah. Anything else? No one else?
Thank you for your class. On receiving guests, I'm always amazed because my business is to go around and set up my tent and my artwork, you know, these different art shows, and I'm usually surrounded by several hundred other artists. We've all traveled a long ways. We've put in hours, days, weeks, months in creating these pieces, and we create a nice atmosphere for people to walk into our tent, hopefully, to, you know, appreciate, and even more, perhaps. But I'm always amazed at how many artists will sit in the back of the tent with their head stuck in a book, or they're working their cell phone or whatever, not even greeting the people that come in. It's just amazing to me that that goes on. I remember going to a show here in downtown Gainesville. A fellow had these incredible pieces of artwork, and he was literally in the back of the tent where there was some grass asleep. You know, so, I mean, these things, as Prabhupada would say, are going on. You know, that people don't know, you know, the culture is, I don't know what the culture is. It's a little bit of everything. It's a mixed bag. But to hear these teachings of the Bhagavatam, how guests should be properly greeted, at the very least, given some words of thank you for coming, you know, appreciate you coming, have you been here before, yada, 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 you know. I think it goes a long ways. Definitely goes a long ways.
Well, you know, in these guidelines that were given here for receiving a guest in our home, what to speak if we're trying to execute a business exchange, that much more attentiveness is required. You know, because people have many places to spend their hard-earned money. So if we want to encourage them to share that with us, there has to be some enticement aside from just here's something to buy. The mood, the atmosphere, like I was saying earlier, you go into a place and you're not paid attention to, you're not so inclined to, you know, is all part of the art of retail as well. Something we as struggling Vaishyas need to be perfect at. All right, we'll finish there. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam.